Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and I want to say good morning to the, I assume, the lovely person who announces us. At least she sounds wonderful. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Marilyn. Okay. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I'm a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School, Tampa Bay campus, and I'm here with my compatriot, Brendan Berry, who is also a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School, Tampa Bay campus. And I want to say good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Jeffrey. How are you?
Oh, I'm just, hunky-dory.
Good.
I woke up, as I say every time somebody asks, I woke up this morning, okay?
Right.
So yeah. It's a good day. And I'm gonna always, be glad that I had, I'm opening my eyes. And I want to say good morning to Hezzy. Hezzy is our benefactor, our patron, all the things that are good about life.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hezzy. You have no idea how much I thank you. And so first thing I got to say is that everything that Brendan and I say and the opinions that we set forth are not necessarily the opinions of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School. That's where we work. Yeah, WMU Cooley Law School, both of its campuses, actually, and or its faculty, either individually or at large. So we'll leave it at that. And we're going to change things around today because I'm going to let Brendan go first.
You are. You should have told you that.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you that, didn't I? Okay, are you ready? Okay, well, you told me you were ready when we talked a half an hour ago. So, you go ahead and do your thing.
Well, don't you have anything you want to get off your chest this morning?
I got so many things to get off of my chest. If you open that can of worms, you might as well just hang up the phone and listen to the show. Okay?
Yeah, I might just do that. That would be.
Okay.
Oh, God.
So, I'm giving you your shot first, so go.
All right. Yeah. So I wanted to start, because we usually start with a segment called, what do you really think? And I've been thinking about a lot about what's, in the news lately, that being the beating death of Tyree Nichols and the aftermath of that. And, of course, multiple video tapes, recordings were released. There was anticipation that it would cause quite a stir. Many of the people who saw it before it was released warned us that it would be shocking and appalling. They were right about half of that. It was absolutely appalling. But what I really thought when I saw it was, unfortunately, it's not shocking. And I know, Jeff, you and I talked earlier today about the history of this. I watched the way the police officers behaved in this case, and unfortunately it was consistent with the way you often see police officers behave when video recordings of their behavior is available. Now, I don't want to overgeneralize and paint all police officers in the United States as though they have similarly disordered behavior. But I do want to express my disappointment, to put it mildly, at how common this behavior is. On this very program several months ago, I talked about the same topic, the behavior of police officers in crisis situations. As we've discussed before, I'm an aviation geek. I don't fly real planes, but I'm
That's
fascinated
unfortunate.
By it. I know. And Jeff does.
You really should do that, by the way.
I know.
You really should. Doesn't
matter. I know.
Go ahead.
As soon as I have an extra 20 or 30 grand stashed away, I'll get right to that.
I'll take the first lesson. The first lesson is $75.
Right. because I'm such an aviation geek, you know, I follow this stuff. And the behavior of airline pilots, which I've always found to be, I mean, they're certainly capable of losing their stuff, but I've always found them to be remarkably calm. They keep themselves that way, even in a life-threatening crisis situation. That's part of their training, is to remain calm, is to confront the situation before them, is to rely on their training, sort of put things in, you know, autopilot, no pun intended.
I'm not even going to go in there.
and then you look at the behavior of these police officers in these situations. You know, you would think that they would be required to be as professional as anybody else who has people's lives in their hands, like an airline pilot, right? And calm the you-know-what down. It's, you know, if you fancy yourself, excuse me, a strong, you know, macho type of a figure, you know, newsflash, losing your mind, being hysterical is not that. Right, that doesn't make you tough. It doesn't make you macho. It makes you an out-of-control, hysterical toddler, the way you're behaving. The screaming, the loss of emotional control, the anger, the unprofessionalism, the failure to rely on training, the lack of training to calm down, it is absolutely appalling. So the people who said it would be shocking and appalling were right about that. But I'll finish this rant with repeating one more time. It's not shocking. And something needs to change. And the people we select to be law enforcement officers, the screening, something needs to change in their training, and something needs to change in their behavior. So that's what I really think this morning.
You know, I want to pick up on the last thing you talked about. And the first thing is the selection of people who are police officers. There has been for a while now a culture within police departments to try to find people who are experienced in the use of firearms and are coming out of a situation where they know how to do combat. So they're picking up on soldiers, veterans who come out of the armed forces, and they become, quote, easier to train. They are experienced in the use of firearms. And so this, it makes them very attractive. The problem is that, first of all, a soldier who comes out of combat training or even combat has an experience which is not the same as being on the street. But they come with they're wired looking for the threats everywhere they go. So that's part of the problem. The second is the culture within the police departments themselves. Having been a prosecutor, and I know you never were, Brendan, but I spent the better part of the first 10 years of my life as a lawyer, as a prosecutor in two different jurisdictions. And the one thing that became abundantly clear is that there are police officers who enter into service thinking one way. And as they are trained or they work with older, more experienced police officers, they become indoctrinated in a thought process. And that's the same thought process that is carried forward for decades. And as a result of which, they become their cynicism grows. Their belief in human beings diminishes. As they get older and they build their own lives, they become more protective of themselves than they were when they first became police officers and didn't have families to support and to take care of. As they become even older, they start thinking about the multiple, and this is true, the multiple pensions that they have built up because they move from department to department. As soon as they vest in one pension, they move to another department to build another pension. And there are police officers out there making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in pensions that they have built up over a 25-year career. So all of those things lend themselves to the reactions. But the real problem, you notice, and I don't really mean this in criticizing or in any way, shape, or form, trying to bring race into the killing of Tyree, because there is no race issue as far as Tyree is concerned. Of the eight people, who have either nine people who have now either lost their jobs or been suspended or been indicted, whatever it may be, involved in this incident. Two of them are white. The remainder of them are black. And so there isn't within the black community the same kind of rage that we saw when it was white police officers and black victims. There appears to be a confusion within the black community, not of what's right and what's wrong. There's no confusion there. They've centered themselves on their outrage within the departments and the cultures within the departments. But many times the violence that we have seen following incidents like this have been racially motivated outrage. That is, white police officers doing this to black citizens. Here they don't have that. And so we're not seeing the kind of, we're seeing marching, but we're not seeing violence. There's no way to promote violence within the black community because these officers are black. There is no racial component to Tyree's case. It is one of those cases where we truly, as you have said, have to look at the underlying matters. How did these police officers end up doing the things that they did? What is the rage within them that caused them to not stop? That there had to be a point where they knew they should stop. My reaction to this is I feel like I'm looking at gang violence, as it has been at least shown to us either by documentaries and or films that supposedly are supposed to mirror life. Okay, I'm not sure where this rage comes from. Where did they learn to behave like this? Where did they learn to take an unconscious person and start kicking him with your steel-toed boot in the head? Where do they learn this stuff? Where does this rage come from? And it could go back to the people that we recruit. Why do you want to be a police officer? Some people want to be police officers because they want to carry a gun and they want to push people around. Some people become a police officer because they come out of the military and this is the easiest job for them to get. Some people become police officers because they truly feel either through their family being involved in police work or whatever else they think of, they want to do something for their community. Some do it for the money. The truth of the matter is that who are we recruiting and why do they want to be police officers and why is it that psychological examinations don't disclose these people that are filled with rage and anger that they take out on other people? Why is it we see so much domestic violence in marriages that include police officers. And why do police officers cover up for the misdoings of other police officers? Why does this happen? That's the question, no matter what color they may be. Something has to change. Now, I told Brennan I was going to tell a story. Some people are outraged at what they see on this film, and they should be. Some of us, many of us, have seen this before, almost identical behavior. In 1980, Arthur McDuffie, black insurance broker, was riding his motorcycle in a way he should not have been riding it. A police officer attempted to stop him, and Arthur said, "I'm not stopping." And he took off. In the end, there were five police units who were engaged in stopping Arthur McDuffie, who crashed at some point. And then they ran over all five of these police officers, encircled Arthur McDuffie, and beat him to death with flashlights. All five of these officers were either Hispanic or white. They were all indicted for the murder of Arthur McDuffie. But the case couldn't be tried in Miami because of all of the publicity, and so they moved it to where I sit right now, Tampa, Florida, which in 1980 was just a sleepy little racist town. They went to trial. The evidence was overwhelming. Overwhelming. And it took them 2 hours to acquit all five police officers. And thus we had what was known as the McDuffie riots in Miami, which burnt Liberty City to the ground, the scars of which still exist. Vacant lots where there used to be stores. The inability of the people in Liberty City, that is the African Americans that live there, to build their own stores because they didn't have the money to invest. And white storekeepers said, "I'm not going back there." And Liberty City has never recovered. But it was all caused by the same conduct, only this time it was a black victim and white police officers, and they walked out of a courtroom. We've seen this before. So it is not just white police officers or Hispanic police officers or even black officers. It's all of these people are participating in a system that trains them to be violent and trains them to react. And it becomes a group activity that sucks more and more of them in. Once starts, they all jump in. Something's got to change. And I'm not talking about defunding the police. God forbid. So I agree with you. It's appalling. It's absurd. And it'll be interesting to see who else gets charged. The three people who showed up for fire rescue, the lieutenant, and one of the firefighters, the EMTs, were black. The third one was white. All three of them have been suspended from their jobs or fired from their jobs. There were two more police officers who've been identified as being at the scene of the beating. One was white. They were involved in setting up the perimeter that kind of closed in and caught Tyree. Whether they were involved in the beatings or not, it is unclear, but it doesn't matter. They should have stopped it. And so they've already lost their jobs. But whether they get charged or not is still pending. I don't know. It's just a horrible example of bad policing, and the question comes in, who allows, how many more of these things have happened to people who can't fight that, who don't get attention, who Ben Crump doesn't show up in town for 10 minutes and grab the case.
Yeah.
How many of them don't have Reverend Al coming to their town to do the funerals? How many others don't have the NAACP jumping up and down? How many others of these people don't get the attention and therefore we don't know about it? Inquiring people want to know. I want to know. Do you want to know?
Yeah.
Do you want to know, Brendan?
Yeah, and I also want you to discuss what we talked about earlier, that you had that discussion last night, and the advice that you give to people about which party is going to de-escalate a situation. What's your saying? You can beat the charge, but you can't beat the ride, or am I misquoting that?
Not beat the charge. You can beat the rap, but you can't beat the ride. Okay, mm-hmm. That's the expression. That's an accurate statement, by the way. I have this discussion with my classes. I teach criminal procedure. For those of you who don't know, that's the study of the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments. And to the United States Constitution, so that we know which amendments we're talking about. And I had this discussion with them about one of the few pieces of legal advice I give them and that they should give others as to what to do when you are stopped or a police officer attempts to stop you. And there are a couple exceptions to this that I'll talk about at the end. But I try to instill, as I did last night, that as much as it shouldn't be you, the citizen, who should be de-escalating, it is you who are the citizen who has to take that step. There are two things in a police officer's life that are the most dangerous things they do. The first is walking in on a domestic violence situation. Incredibly dangerous. Number two is our traffic stops. Yes, this violence happens in traffic stops, but it's not always the police officer who starts the violence. Traffic stops are fraught with problems for everyone, but the answer is not, as some people would say, stop giving tickets. One guy gets on and says, we've incentivized the police to raise money for the police by traffic tickets. If you're driving too fast and you're dangerous, you get a ticket. You have violated the law. If your tag is out of date and you think you're smart and I'll just drive around, I don't have to pay for it, you get a ticket. If you're driving while your license is suspended, you're going to jail for a little bit of time. Sometimes. There are things that we just must accept as citizens are our responsibilities and you get tickets for them. So I don't want to hear stop writing tickets. I don't want to hear that stuff. But it is a very dangerous thing. And I tell anybody who listens, but my students are always get this, if you get stopped by a police officer for a traffic ticket, the first thing you do is keep your hands on your steering wheel. Do not attempt to go reach someplace and go try to get your wallet or into your glove compartment to get your registration and your insurance because he sees that, she sees that, that police officer sees that. And that makes them nervous. That makes them walk up to your car with their hand on their gun, holstered, but on their gun and unsnapped. Don't do that. When the officer arrives, the officer, will stand over your left shoulder behind you. Why? He can see everything you're doing, and if you make any kind of threatening move, he can react before you can complete that act. It's the safest place for him to be or for her to be. So that's where they're going to stand. Don't be a smartass and roll down your window a half an inch. Put your window down. The officer will tell you why he stopped you, and you're going to say, "Officer, may I go into the glove compartment and get certain documents? May I go into my purse? May I reach behind and get the wallet out of my pocket? Can I go into my briefcase or my backpack and get certain things?" Before you do those things, let them know what you are going to do. If that officer asks you to get out of the car, get out of the car. Don't say, "I don't have to," because, yes, you do. And if you want the case law cited, I'll be more than happy to write you a little letter with three or four cases to tell you you have to get out of the car because technically, believe it or not, you are under arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we treat it like what we call a Terry-type stop, which is a brief investigatory stop. But you are technically under the Fourth Amendment. You have been arrested for violating the law. Do as you are told. If the officer takes your documents and says he'll be back in a few minutes, don't do anything stupid that draws his attention. Just sit there quietly and look at the traffic slowing down next to you to make sure somebody you know doesn't see you. Because that's the thing that you're most afraid of at that point, being embarrassed. When that officer comes back and he starts explaining to you what happened, don't be a smartass and say, "You know you can do this and you know you can do that." Makes you sound really experienced at traffic tickets. Don't do that. Just say, "Thank you, officer." And he'll say, "Sign here." Sign the ticket. You're not admitting to anything. I don't care what anybody says. That's just promising to appear in court. And when you do that, sign the ticket, hand everything back to the officer who will give you your copy and all the little things that he gives you, the envelope and all kinds of things. And when he goes to leave, don't get nasty. Just say, "Thank you, officer. Have a nice day, officer. Stay safe out there, officer." And then drive away slowly. Do not kick up gravel in an officer's face and think that's funny. Or don't do what one judge in Miami's son did, drive over the police officer's foot.
Wow.
Yeah, that's stupid. Don't do that, okay? You cannot argue your way out of the ticket. You can't. It's not going to happen. I'm telling you now, I don't care how good your arguments are, don't do it. Don't say things like, "Why don't you go arrest somebody, the real criminal? And I pay your salary." Boy, that they love that. "I pay your salary."
Yeah.
Okay, they love that one. Boy, that they just sort of revel in that. It makes them feel embarrassed. No, they hate that. Okay? And just remember, you cannot win a street argument of any kind. You cannot win a street argument with a police officer, period. You will never convince him that you are right and that he is wrong. It is not going to happen. That's why we have courts. You go to court and make your arguments. Let a judge decide. But you're not going to win with a police officer on the street. Ain't going to happen. And all you're going to do is you're going to end up like Mrs. Atwater down in Texas. Atwater versus City of Lago Vista. She started railing, and this is in Texas, by the way, not Florida. And she started railing on the police officer for giving her a ticket for having her child, not having her child seat belted. They didn't have a requirement of car seats in, but they had to be belted in. And she just started laying into the guy. And so what he did is he said, "Ma'am, do you have a cell phone?" "Yes, I do." "Would you please get your husband on the phone for me?" "Yeah, he's going to give you what for." And he got on the phone. He said, "Mr. Atwater, how far away from, you know," and he described where they were, "are you?" And Mr. Atwater said, "I'm 10 minutes away." He says, "You got to get over here right away. I'm arresting your wife, and you've got to come pick up your son." And he arrested her, handcuffed her, put her in the back of his car, took her down to the police station where she was fingerprinted, photographed, deloused, given a jumpsuit, and put into and given a full body search, a cavity search, and then she was put into a holding cell with some real criminals, quote unquote. And she sued the police saying, you didn't have to do that, you could have written a ticket. Supreme Court said that's an arrest and they can do whatever they want in furtherance of the arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Want to end up like Mrs. Atwater? Mr. Atwater, by the way, sued for loss of consortium. I don't need to describe that to you. I think you can figure it out on your own because she was so disturbed. Okay, just don't do these things. De-escalate. Be the person with the smile on your face. Be the person who keeps their voice down low. Do not give that officer an opportunity because he's in a bad mood over something else that happened during that day to take it out on you. And that's what I tell my students. I think that it's very important. And I said, I haven't changed my mind. It will lower the chances of your getting into a confrontation. It will not eliminate them. But it certainly will lower them. And I just say, this is what you do. And I'm telling everybody who's listening, this is what you do. You never, ever, ever run away. Ever. That's a felony. Now they got everything they need to do whatever they want to do to you. Don't ever run away. And all of these cases that we talk about, and I'm not blaming it on the victims. I want to say that right now. I do not blame this on the victims who are absolutely mauled at times or killed. But they all have one thing in common. Black, white, it doesn't matter. They ran. They resisted, and they ran. That is the worst thing you can do. These guys were mad because he ran. He did not accede to their authority. They had to mm-hmm. set up a perimeter. They had to be on the radios of people knowing some guy got away from them. They were embarrassed by it. They're tough guys, and they're going to prove that they're in charge. I think in the end, that's what happened. And it got completely out of control because one guy decided to kick him in the head with a steel-toed boot. One guy decided to tase him. Another guy decided to pepper spray him. Everybody had to get in on the action. And it's true what they described. They treated this guy like he was a human pinata. That's what they did. He was today's fun. So that's what I tell my students. And that's what I'll tell anybody that will listen. Just don't put yourself in a position where you can be alleged to have been abusive yourself. It doesn't justify what happens to you, but it's a reason. Is that what you wanted to hear, Brendan?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's important.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Yeah. I mean, there was a kid who used to ride on the Courtney Campbell Causeway down here doing things wrong, trying to attract attention from highway patrol officers so he could videotape them. And in one of them, he got stopped. And he lowered his window just far enough to put his fingers through and give the officer all of the documents he had to give him. And the officer said, sir, please put your window all the way down. And this kid said, I don't have to do that. And the officer said, yes, you do. Please put your window down. I don't have to do that. I have a constitutional right not to do that. Sir, that's incorrect. Please lower your window. And this went on for like 10 minutes. Finally, the police officer had enough and took his fingers and stuck them through the window, both hands, and ripped the window right out of the car. And then recreated birth by grabbing this kid by the shirt and pulling him through the window that was missing. You know, the opening? He recreated birth. Okay? Okay, because he didn't think that he had to. He wouldn't get out of the car. He was asked to get out of the car before he did that. You wouldn't get out of the car. I don't have to get out of the car. Yes, sir, you do have to get out of the car. I don't have to get out of the car. You know what? Don't be a smart ass and think you're smart, because you're not. Kid went to court and claimed that he was abused and all kinds of things. The officer said, the judge said, were you asked to get out of the car? Yes. Why didn't you? Because I don't have to. Well, you're wrong. Yes, you do. We don't see his YouTubes anymore. Don't be that guy. Don't be that woman.
Don't be a sovereign citizen.
You lose. Yeah, you lose. You lose. If it makes you feel better, do that, and then you'll end up losing. Because you know what the officer's doing? On the back of his copy of the ticket, he's writing everything you said. And when you go to court and you ask for a withhold of adjudication and you're all nice, the officer gets up and says, before you decide that, Judge, this is what this person said to me.
Mm-hmm.
That happened in my courtroom. And all of a sudden, and I happened to know this person's husband, and I knew the lawyer because the husband and the lawyer both play basketball with me on Sundays. And I just looked at the lawyer and I said, I'm sorry, Randy, 4 points. No one treats police officers in the jurisdiction I work in like that. Nobody. And she's had 10 speeding tickets in the last 5 years. Sorry. All with withholding. Not going to happen. Okay? She came to court and started telling me off. How could I do that to her without hearing her side of the story? I said, well, you weren't here. And she starts taking off on me. So I leaned back in my chair. I let her talk when she was done. I'm sorry, ma'am, but your behavior here today tells me the officer was telling me the absolute and total truth. Your motion to set aside the adjudication is denied. And her husband, who was sitting in the back of the courtroom, who was a former NBA player, started smiling until she turned around. Then the smile left his face. That's what happened. Don't do that. Don't do it. To say that Guy Sports on the podcast said, don't do that, so I'm not going to do that. Don't say that. Okay? Let's get off this subject. Enough of this. It's gone on way too long.
Mm.
It really has.
No, that's okay.
Let's talk about football referees.
Yeah.
It
oh,
is.
God.
Let's talk again, yeah. But it wasn't a discussion. It was me ranting. let's talk about football referees and basketball referees. Mm. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that's fun.
No? They're judges, right?
Yeah.
Aren't they judges? They're like lower court judges, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Don't talk to LeBron today about something that happened last night. Okay, because he went to the middle of the court at the end of the game after they didn't call a foul on a shot that he would have won the game with, and started praying. He got down on his hands and knees and started praying for a while. But he's a little upset, okay? But there's a lot of us that are a little upset about the football games and the referees, and there's a hue and a cry in the public. I mean, this is an important public thing, okay? I mean, it's like a hue and a cry to do something about the quality of refereeing, that it's gone downhill. No, it hasn't. What we have is we have replay that shows where they make mistakes that we didn't used to have. Okay. Okay, so, but there, you know, there were some really bad calls, in particular in the Kansas City-Cincinnati game. And I'm not talking about the one where he got shoved. He hit the guy. He hit, what's his name, out of bounds. That was a good call. But there were some really bad calls. So, I guess they're trying to set up a system now where even in penalties, there would be like this instant replay done before the penalties actually enforced to determine whether there really was a penalty or not by some guy in New York who's looking at all the video. That would be a good thing, okay? But depending on which side you're on. But, you know, it looks like we're going to have an appellate court. And then there'll be a Supreme Court after that. If you don't like the decision of the guy you appeal to, you get one more shot with a guy more important than him. Okay? That's really going to be, yeah, okay? It's a legal process, people. You're entitled to due process on all penalties. Okay? Before you can be 10 yards against you, you get an appeal, and then you have the right,
right.
to seek certiorari to somebody even higher up. How's that
sound? Yeah, right.
Football games can last 8 hours.
I was just going to say.
I just thought I'd, that was just kind of a thing. That's all. Why don't you talk about the case that's pending in front of the Supreme Court right now in regards to student loans? And then I've got a few things that I'll add into that as you're talking about it.
Yeah. So at the end of February, right around the corner here, the Supreme Court is going to hear oral argument in a case where a number of red states are suing the Biden administration and the Department of Education over President Biden's decision to cancel $10,000 of student loan debt for certain people and a certain range of income. The constitutional issue here is that you don't get to sue in federal court, where obviously this is, unless you have what we lawyers call standing, which means that you have to show that you have somehow been injured by the other party, right? We need to have a concrete, palpable controversy, a real live controversy where somebody's been hurt and the other person is alleged to have done the hurting, right? And so that gives you standing. So you got to come into court and say, something other than, well, it hurt my feelings. Okay, that's not an injury.
And it has to create. And by the way, it has to create a federal question. It has to be based upon some federal question.
Yeah. Right. And and you have to have suffered something. I mean, it's just the way our system works. So the question has arisen here. With regard to these red states suing the Biden administration, how exactly do they have standing to even bring a claim like this? If we're going to be intellectually honest about this, we know the real problem these states have. And Jeff, I know you have printed out what the states are arguing is their concrete and palpable injury, but there comes a time, like I said, if we're going to be honest about this, where you have to, take your head out of the sand and say, look, I'm not going to pretend not to know what we all know. Everybody knows why these states are suing the Biden administration. And the reason is simply because they disagree with the policy, or they just disagree with anything Joe Biden does. And so, is a court of law an appropriate forum for red states to be airing their political grievances against the Biden administration? And is the Supreme Court the right forum to be essentially, doing what conservatives always say liberals do, which is legislating, which is making policy decisions rather than legal decisions? And so I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do in this case, but boy, if they say that these red states have standing, to the extent they've been harmed at all, it is so attenuated and tangential. But now, is this court above intellectual dishonesty? Well, we know the answer to that question. So, but I hope they don't make obvious the truth. There's in the constitutional law casebook that I teach from, there's a footnote, a note after one of the cases that cites a law review article that says it boils down to this. If the court agrees with the ideological agenda of the person bringing the claim, then that person has standing. If the court either disagrees or doesn't care about the ideological claim of the person bringing the suit, then that person does not have standing. Now, that's a very cynical way to look at how courts handle the standing doctrine. But if the court finds standing in this case, I'm going to start highlighting that footnote and saying, you take that to the bank, students, because that's the way it is. I don't know if you wanted to talk about what.
I can do it real quickly because we haven't got a lot of time. But in this particular case, there are four theories that they use to establish standing. The first one is that some of the states claim that it will diminish their tax revenues. And the reason why that will happen is because the Internal Revenue Code normally treats discharge of indebtedness as gross income. Here, under the provisions of the forgiveness, it's not going to be considered income. Therefore, that income that would have been declared is not, and most states that have state income taxes base your liability on your gross income, or your net income is declared to the federal government. So they said they're losing income, mm-hmm. that the action diminishes their ability to collect appropriate taxes. The second basis is that three of them assert a second standing theory, and that was they argue that because the plan provides relief for direct loans, but not for family education loans, it has encouraged borrowers to consolidate their family education loans into direct loans, as a result of which it causes financial harm to state entities because they're the ones that make money on the interest by making these family education loans.
Good God.
That's your second one. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you'd get a laugh out of that one, okay?
Yeah.
The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals that heard this case adopted a theory of standing based upon a federal statute, which creates state-created entities, in particular in the state of Missouri, that has contracted with the Federal Department of Education to service the loans. Well, if there are no loans, or they reduce the amount, or they're paid off, there are no loans for them to make money off of by administering those loans. So therefore, they have lost income themselves. Okay. The fourth, the states also advanced a different theory under this same law, which is MOHELA. They assert that the relationship between MOHELA and Missouri, MOHELA is the name of the act, means the financial injuries to MOHELA are injuries to the state, and thus MOHELA's alleged loss of servicing fees diminishes their value to the state. That's their big push. That's what they think is their standing issue, that there are direct – my answer to all of those claims, most of them are, well, what if they just pay off the loans? Are you going to make money? What if all the loans get paid off by the people that owe them? You're not going to have anything to service anymore. You're not going to have any tax to collect. You're not going to have any of that. If they pay the loans off, you're not collecting tax. Well, they're arguing that it's after tax. That's after tax dollars, not pre-tax dollars. And when IRS lets them off the hook, that's pre-tax dollars, which means they pay less income tax. That's their big push here. That's what they're claiming is the reasons why they have standing. It doesn't exist. It's created out of whole cloth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they have no injury. But most of all, I don't see the federal question. Why is it a federal question? Because a federal agency does something. You're going to have to establish more than they – that basically the argument is you did this to us. No, they did something for people. We didn't do anything to you.
Right.
That's the answer. What did we do to you? We didn't do anything to you. And the fact that people are consolidating their loans under a federal program has probably been happening ever since the federal program was created. Why is it that student loans can buy a car for a student? Student loans can pay rent. Student loans can buy clothes. It can buy computers. You can use your student loan for anything that you can liken to going to school, like getting yourself to and from school in a new car you just bought. Maybe that's not right, but that's the way it's structured right now. Does that mean that the student loan program hurts banks and GMAC and all these people who loan money to people to buy a car, so we should stop doing that? Do they have standing now? I don't think so. Unless I'm missing something, Brendan.
No.
I don't think I am.
No, and I was thinking as you were rattling off those four theories of standing that these states have, If I were a judge, I would just say this, right? Here's the rule. If you have to try that hard, if you have to contort yourself that much to convince me that you do have standing, you don't have standing, right? Just the fact that you're making these arguments tells me that you don't have standing, because you're working way too hard to try to convince me.
You're working way too hard to get there. This is supposed to be a simple theory, okay?
Yeah,
not something convoluted.
Okay? If somebody break your leg, okay, then you've got standing, okay? But this thing, get out of my courtroom, man.
Yeah, Joe Schmo didn't come in and borrow from one of your banks. Now I have standing. Okay, no, I'm sorry, no. I wanted to raise one more thing because we only got a minute left. Donald Trump has decided, for those of us who listen to the tapes of his interviews, and I did, okay, Trump is suing Bob Woodward now over release of the tapes. And his claim is multifold, but mostly in fancy words in his complaint, he alleges that Trump made it clear that the tapes were only to make sure he was quoted accurately, not for release to the general public, because my voice is worth $50 million on those tapes, okay, because everybody knows my voice. So I want a piece of the action. That's his claim. That's going to about last as long as all the other claims that he's made. And I hope he gets hit with another $1 million in attorney's fees like he just did from Judge Middlebrooks down in the Southern District of Florida. I really hope that happens. But he's suing Bob Woodward because Bob Woodward is making a lot of money and has made a tremendous amount of money off of Donald Trump. Three books. This is the fourth book. Seriously. He's making so much money. He's never been this wealthy before. So, and Donald wants a piece of the action. That's all. It's a grift, just like the rest of the grifts that I was talking to Heisey about before we went on the air. The grift is coming to an end. Donald's having a hard time raising money. And people aren't buying into his pitches for money. So the grift may be coming to an end. And I think that's great. And there's all kinds of other stuff we can talk about. He's got more problems because Stormy McDaniels has stormed back into the news. Okay. You like the way I play on words?
Okay. Yeah, very good, very good.
She's back in the news. She's back, people. Like a bad penny, she keeps turning up. But, the whole thing. And I think next week we really should spend some time, and I think we will, talking about Bill Barr, one of our favorite subjects, how he's went on this, we know that he wrote a book and he's gone on this glamour tour and he's trying to look like this reasonable guy. And all he's really done is trying to get around the fact that he literally came within a hair's breadth of destroying the Department of Justice over Donald Trump. And we'll talk about more about that next week. Because that's a big subject. So.
Yeah.
It's 11 o'clock.
Is it?
The clock on the wall says it's 11 o'clock. I think it is. I could be wrong, but I'll check again.
I've got six minutes left.
Oh, no, it's only 54. I'm sorry. I saw 48, and I kept thinking we only had 2 minutes. We've got a couple of minutes left, so we can pick up on some of this if we want to, or we can talk about Elon if you want to and the fact that he's now not one of the most richest people in the world. You want to talk about that?
Yeah,
he's destroyed his car company. He's destroyed his own personal wealth. He's destroyed Twitter. He was so desperate he let Donald back on to Twitter, and Donald says, "I don't need you. Thank you. Bye." Okay, he's down to 420 employees in Twitter.
That's amazing.
Out of the thousands. And Brendan, why did he fire all those people?
You tell me. Because they didn't laugh at his jokes, right?
They didn't laugh at his jokes.
Right.
Okay, he would put things on Twitter that were funny, and he would walk around the building when he published it, and nobody was laughing.
Mm-hmm.
So he fired him. This guy's crazy.
He's nuts.
I mean, really, he's brilliant, and a lot of brilliant people are crazy. He's a great idea man. He's a great engineer, but he knows nothing about money. And he's going to blow it all. He's going to lose Tesla. Twitter's going to go belly up. That's $44 billion. Hey, Elon, if you got that kind of money, give some of it to me. I already asked Bill Gates, and he said no. Remember last week I asked Bill Gates? I got an email. No. That's all it said. Okay, so I'm asking you, Elon, can I have some of your money? I'm a nice guy. I won't make fun of you anymore. I'll say you're the most generous man on the face of the earth. And I'll say it profusely if you give me even more than I'm asking for. Okay, so, all right. You want to talk about the Pelosi tapes.
Well, and that's related because Elon Musk.
That's more craziness.
Well, it's also Elon Musk himself.
Who
was one of
but
the perpetrators.
Apologized.
Yeah, well, okay.
Sort of.
Nonetheless, the recklessness that somebody who owns the world's biggest, social media platform would be in on this conspiracy theory about Paul Pelosi that the right made up out of nowhere, that what was really going on here was some kind of homosexual tryst gone wrong, a lover spat, right, is what happened to Paul Pelosi. You know, Elon Musk was part of that. It's unimaginable how reckless you have to be to start spreading conspiracy theories like that with absolutely no factual basis. And
we
have
the tape. Their factual basis was that it happened in San Francisco.
Yeah, right. There you go. You know.
Yeah, it had to be because it was in San Francisco. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's.
I just think that it's more than that. It's the on MSNBC the other morning, and I wish I had taken a screenshot of it. They listed 20 people who set forth mm-hmm. these theories that either it didn't exist and it was all made up. Or is a homosexual tryst, like Donald Jr.'s picture of his Halloween costume, a pair of underwear and a hammer, and he was going as Pelosi. Some of the other people, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Gosar, Gates, Trump, like all these people tweeting out a theory that now has been completely debunked thanks to video and audio. Audio of the 911 call, video of what the officers actually saw happen. There were people who said there was no attack. It's all a fake. Really? It's all on video. Would you like to see it? And then the other people who claimed that there was this homosexual tryst, the guy who did it got on the phone and called a reporter and said he's only sorry that he didn't act quicker. And he apologized to all the right-wing people for not being as effective a soldier as he should have been.
How are you doing, man?
Seriously.
That's
what they're alleging. Okay? So, be that as it may. Just on.
Okay.
So,
give me 1 minute.
I don't know what we do.
I can just one more minute to 10 o'clock.
Okay, cool. 11, so it'll be good.
Yeah, we're almost done, guys.
Okay. Sounds like Hezzy might need to go.
Hezzy, you need to go. You got company. Okay.
It's the internet. It's the internet service. It was a problem, so thank goodness it's been functioning all this hour. But it may have to go down for a minute while they fix something.
Okay. Well.
So my apologies.
Well, you take care of it. All right.
I
next
will.
Week we'll get into Bill Barr. I think that I'm
yeah.
going to start
oh, excellent.
With him. So. Okay, we'll talk about Bill Barr and anything else that comes, you know, because something's going to happen this week. I mean,
no, never, right?
Okay, you know, every day's a new adventure, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Thanks so much, guys.
Okay, Hesney, have a great week.
Stay healthy.
Take care of yourself.
You
Brendan,
as well.
We'll talk
soon. Bye-bye. Sounds good.
Okay, bye-bye.
Brendan.
Bye-bye. All right,
bye-bye. Yes, bye. Okay, it looks like we are on, and sorry for the delay. It was like about a 13-minute delay. Evidently, the internet service had to be fixed. There was a problem with it. It was intermittent, but it looks like we're fine. So let's cover some of the news, which I think you'll find really, really, really fascinating. One second here. Bear with me a moment. Let me just recheck to see if I've got everything in place, and then we'll be able to cover some of the news. One second here. All right. Okay, let me move on here. Forgive me a moment. And okay. Hopefully this is pulling in. See you in a moment. Okay. I'll just have to see if this works. All right, one second. Okay, I'm not sure about what this is. I'm seeing new notes, and evidently we'll see what happens pretty soon. One second. See what goes on here. All right, let's see if this works. Okay, I think it's working, but evidently there's a bit of a delay here, so we'll see what goes on here. All right. Truly amazing, because I can't get to my screens. So we'll find out. We'll start probably pretty soon, even though the guy was here fixing the system or reviewing the system. When he left, he said everything was functioning. So the question is, maybe there's something going on at my end, and we'll see what that story is. Bear with me a second. All right, we'll try this one more time. Okay. Okay. Well, evidently, it looks like we were doing all right, or so we thought, but evidently, it's not functioning. Not quite functioning. Find out pretty soon in a moment. I've got to go redo some of the stuff. Here we go.